Chapter 23. Their squad's bunk room is strangely empty, and Dogma feels unsettled. He shouldn't. It's not that weird to have a trooper get transferred, either to a special track or just another squad, and they've been down to 4 men before, Vector transferring in late, but there are still hours until classes start, and Dogma can't sleep knowing the bunk beside his is empty. With a sigh, Dogma rolls over, giving up on sleep, and lets his bed slide out of the wall. There's no one else awake, no sound from beyond the room, and when he slips down, the echo of his bare feet on the floor is unpleasantly loud. There's no curfew enforced, nothing saying he has to stay and stare at the top of his bunk until morning. But Dogma still feels mildly guilty as he pulls on his uniform and boots, slipping out of the bunk room and into the quiet hallways. There's no reason to be. If he's tired tomorrow, it's his own fault, and at least they're off combat courses until they can get another cadet transferred to their squad. But the itch of unease stays. Tup gets nightmares, and Dogma would always listen for them, would bang a fist against the wall to wake him up, and then sit with him while he calmed down. He wonders, a little grimly, if Tup's just going to have to deal with them on his own now. General T probably has better things to do than wake up a thrashing trooper, and Dogma knows that, wouldn't ask her to, but still. He used to help, and now Tup's somewhere he can't. It was always going to happen, Dogma knows. They're soldiers and they'll follow orders, because it's the right thing to do. No matter where they eventually get stationed, the chances of them ending up near each other were slim at best, but they're friends, and Dogma can't sleep now. He's just worried, that's all. Tup's a soldier, just like the rest of them. He's steady and competent and smart. He'll make a good aide for the general. It's just going to take some getting used to, that's all. Dogma thinks again of that glimpse of General T in the medbay, how she'd swept in and made the world go quiet around her. A real Jedi, he'd thought, awed and more than a little disbelieving. A Jedi coming to see them, smiling at them, worried about them. Some of their brothers tell stories about the Jedi, about them arriving on the battlefield and turning the tide single-handedly, about them facing Grievous or Ventress as the enemy leaders cut through clones, stopping them in their tracks and driving them away. And Dogma always knew it, always listened and understood, but he'd never believed until that moment, seeing General T. He hopes that whatever general he's assigned to eventually, they're as kind and wise as General T. By one of the long, darkened windows, far across the facility from his too quiet bunk, Dogma's steps slow. Stop. He pauses there, looking out over the oceans, and rests a hand against the transparent steel with a breath. Wonders, distantly, how many battles General T is called to, and whether Tup will go with her. Probably. There's little use in picking a clone as an aide if they don't actually act as an aide. And for all that General T has Commander Colt to guard her, more guards likely can't hurt, but the odds are that Tup's going to see far fewer fronts than the rest of them, and Dogma is deeply, achingly grateful for that. Tup has enough nightmares as it is. He doesn't need anything to give them more fuel. There's at least that thought to cling to. Even if Dogma is going to be far away, even if he might never see Tup again, the general and Commander Colt will keep him safe, and he won't be in the thick of the fighting. He might even survive the war. Dogma can't ask for any more than that. More at ease, he pushes away from the window. What are you doing out here? With a yelp, Dogma recoils, almost tripping over his own feet, wrenches around, reaching for the blaster he isn't carrying, and comes face to face with a scowling Jedi. "General Kolar," he says, heart in his throat, and snaps into a hasty salute. "Sorry, sir, I didn't see you. I'm sorry." General Kolar waves that off with an impatient hand. He's not like General T, not in the least, though he's equally impressive. Unlike her gentle expression and calm composure, General Kolar has a grim expression, and his hair is messy. His robe's battle-worn, and his lightsaber a bright, obvious spot at his belt. He looms even when he's just standing there, and Dogma has to swallow as he takes a careful step back. "Well?" General Kolar asks, and Dogma belatedly registers the question he was asked and tries not to wince. "Sorry, sir," he says. "I was just walking." Glancing past General Kolar, he blinks, taking in the med droid hovering at his shoulder, and feels a spike of alarm. "Are you hurt, sir? Do you need help?" General Kolar doesn't answer for a long moment, frowning at Dogma unreadably. Nervousness prickles down Dogma's spine, and he wonders, grimly, if he's managed to offend a general already, if he's going to be demoted to maintenance for it, if... "I'm fine," General Kolar says finally. "Couldn't sleep, Dogma?" The shock of General Kolar remembering his name almost steals Dogma's breath. There's nothing about him that stands out right now. He doesn't have long hair like Tup or a goatee like Chance or any of the tattoos that cadets usually get after they become troopers. But even with him looking just like all of the hundreds of thousands of clones on Kamino, General Kolar recognized him. It's a little bewildering. "Yes, sir," he says, and wonders what he can add. Will the general think he's pathetic if he tells him he's missing Tup? Is that too much information? Does the general even care? But he helped Tup when Tup was nervous, showed him a breathing exercise to keep him from panicking. He cares a little, at least. And with a quiet sound of acknowledgement, General Kolar inclines his head. "Empty bunks," he says, like he knows. Then turns and looks down the hallway. Pauses, tilting his head, and the light catches on his horns, casts his features in shadow. Just for a moment, he looks dark and ominous, and when he smirks, it really doesn't help. "I'm investigating," he says. "Go back to bed or come with me." "Investigating?" Dogma repeats, startled, and glances at the droid again. Pauses, bewildered. But before he can ask any questions, General Kolar starts moving, sweeping down the hall with long strides. The droid follows, and for half a second, Dogma has no earthly idea what to do. Then, reason reasserts itself, and Dogma does what he's trained for. He follows the general. At the edge of a long corridor leading down past the innermost cloning facilities, Kolar pauses, holding out a hand to stop Dogma. Cocking his head, he narrows his eyes and says, "Two guards on the door. Can you throw?" "Throw? Like a thermal grenade?" Dogma's generally been under the impression that that isn't the kind of thing you toss around near your comrades, but Kolar is a general. He doesn't ask, even if he wants to. "Yes, sir." With a grunt that's more pleased than anything, General Kolar reaches for his belt, comes up with a flashbang grenade, and tosses it at Dogma. Dogma catches it, still entirely bewildered, and glances around the corner to see clones. Clones guarding the cloning chambers, because this is Kamino and there aren't any enemies here, just brothers. Brothers General Kolar wants him to attack. 30 seconds, then throw, General Kolar says, and slips into the shadows along the wall. Instantly, he seems to vanish. Dogma can't pick out so much as a hint of his figure, a trace of movement, even though he looks. There's no one left to ask questions to except the droid, even if Dogma was going to. And he isn't. General Kolar gave him an order, and he must have a reason for it. attacking brothers sits wrong, though. Tight like a curl of horror in Dogma's gut. 27 seconds have passed, the droid says, cocking its head, and Dogma mutters a curse, scrambling to find the detonator on the grenade. He pushes it, feels the click, then leans just far enough around the corner to lob it hard down the hallway. It's the exact movement that's been drilled into them in training, but somehow, Dogma's pretty sure that this isn't what their trainers intended them to do with the information. The clang of the grenade hitting the ground is far too loud in the silent hall, makes both clones jerk around, their armor bright white and unmarked in the light. Dogma wrenches back behind cover just as one shouts. There's a click, a resounding boom, a flash of light so bright Dogma can see it through his closed eyes, even around the corner. He jerks back, wanting to make sure they're still alive, that it wasn't some kind of thermal detonator by mistake, that he didn't get the general. Eyes closed, Kollard spins out of the shadows, sidestepping one clone like it's sheer instinct. Like water, he slips around them as they reel, catches a hand going for a comm, and grabs a helmet, hulling it up and off, grabs skin, then turns, seizing a blaster barrel as it swings for him. Dogma throws himself forward on instinct, takes two running steps, and then drops, sweeping the second clone's legs out from under him as he tries to aim with blinded eyes. Kollard grunts, pleased, and drops the first, then follows the second down, hauling his helmet off as well. One hand on his forehead, a sharp huff, and the cadet's eyes roll back in his head. He slumps, as still as the other one, and Dogma breathes in. "What did you do to them?" he wants to ask, but he keeps his mouth shut. There must be a reason. Kollard is a general. "Someone will have heard that," Kollard says, rising to his feet. He turns to the door, punching in a code, and huffs when it clicks open. AZI-3452. Grimacing, he breaks off, then asks, "Can I give you a nickname?"
"If you want, General," the droid says, sounding bemused.
Kollard nods shortly. "AZI-3, he says. "Do you know where to look?" The droid buzzes through the door, then straight towards one of the cloning pods.
"From here, I can ascertain whether all of the clones bear chips and when in the cloning process they were implanted," it says.
Kollard inclines his head. "Hide if someone comes. I'll return shortly," he says, and closes the door on the droid. Leaning down, he grabs one of the unconscious troopers, hauling him up over his shoulder, and nods at the other. "Get him." Silently, Dogma does as he's told, heaving the trooper up as best as he can. He's not as strong as a Zabrak, and the weight makes him stagger, but he follows General Kollard down the hall to a maintenance closet and helps him secure both clones there, still utterly bewildered as to what's happening. Kollard picks up the spent flashbang grenade, then jerks his head at Dogma and starts walking, long strides eating up the ground. Dogma has to hurry to keep up, and just as he hears voices, they turn down another hall, towards the center of the complex.
"Sir?" Dogma asks carefully, not wanting to offend, not wanting to seem like he's not following orders, just alarmed. General Kollard shouldn't need to sneak a droid into the embryo chamber when the Republic is technically the client here. He should just be able to ask and go right in.
"Ventress attacked," Kollard says without looking back. "We held her off, but she escaped in this direction."
That's a lie, Dogma thinks, stunned. General Kollard is going to lie about what he was doing in the embryo chamber, and he wants Dogma to lie, too.
Uncertain, Dogma hesitates, but when General Kollard rounds the corner, Dogma picks up his pace and follows. Some sense has Kollard lifting his head, his eyes narrowing. He reaches for Dogma, grabbing his arm and hauling him sideways, behind a column, just as a door opens further down the hall.
"Can't imagine what that was," General T says, her voice concerned.
The guards are checking in, but we're still waiting on the men guarding the embryo room. Commander Colt reports. General, you should get somewhere safe.
Nonsense, General T says calmly. Nala Se, may we escort you to a more secure location?
Do you think it's an attack? Nala Se asks, passing them in General T's wake. General T inclines her head.
Given the recent assault on the Rishi Station, it's unlikely to be anything else. This way, please.
Cadet, you go with the general, Colt says, and a moment later, Tup murmurs an agreement. Dogma stills, looking out past Kolar's concealing figure to where Tup is falling in on General T's other side. His hair is pulled up in a neat bun again, all except for one long lock that falls past his shoulder, intricately braided and strung with beads. Nala Se makes a soft sound of impatience.
Surely this is unnecessary, Master T. You would be a very valuable target for the Separatists, I'm afraid.
General T says, perfectly calm.
Please allow us to see you to somewhere further from the incident.
Very well. Nala Se follows General T and Tup around the corner as Colt breaks off, passing their hiding place. He glances sideways, looking right at them, and then keeps going, steps quick.
Good.
General Kolar pushes up, then steps out from behind the column, making for the door of Nala Se's office immediately.
Shock's better at talking, he tells Dogma.
Like, that's the part of this that needs to be explained?
She's really good at it, sir. Dogma agrees a bit helplessly.
He looks back in the direction Colt disappeared, and that was definitely an approving look. So both generals must be in on this.
Probably.
Kolar grunts, then draws the hilt of his lightsaber from his belt. With a hiss, the blue blade ignites, and Dogma jerks back, startled.
Sir?
He demands. But Kolar just eyes Nala Se's office door for a long moment, then stabs the blade forward. It burns through the metal in an instant, and Kolar drags the blade up, around in a circle, then pulls back. With one booted foot, he kicks in the cut piece of the door, then ducks through, careful of his robes. Dogma follows, because at this point, there's really nothing else to do. For a moment, General Kolar stands in the middle of the neat office, looking around with a frown. Then, quick, he crosses to the main computer terminal and leans over it, bringing it to life with a few touches.
That traitor would come in handy right now, he mutters, frowning at it,
but pulls something from a pocket and inserts it into one of the slots.
Traitor, sir? Dogma asks carefully, looking around.
The holo terminal on the wall is off, but he checks it anyway, then looks for anything that might stand out. It's hard when he's not sure what the point of being here even is. Clearly, General Kolar is investigating Nala Se, but why?
Dogma doesn't ask. Former Jedi Quinlan Vos.
General Kolar says distastefully,
Darth Tyrannus's new apprentice. He has psychometry.
A traitor, Dogma thinks, feeling ill. The Jedi aren't supposed to be traitors. They're the ones leading the fighting. But clearly they don't like traitors either, if General Kolar's tone means anything.
Oh, he says, and then belatedly,
thank you, sir. Kolar grunts, frowning at the computer terminal. He doesn't answer, and after a moment, Dogma gives up on looking for anything and slips around behind him to look.
Are you slicing it, sir?
Quietly, Kolar scoffs.
I don't need to, he says. Nala Se knows her passwords, so I do too.
Right, because Jedi can read minds. Dogma feels a flicker of awe, a touch of the thought that he would hate to be on the Separatist side of things, when the Republic has all the Jedi, and Jedi can just reach into someone's head and pull out the correct information. File after file of top-secret documents load themselves onto Kolar's chip, and he smirks faintly, then disengages it and tucks it up his sleeve, looks around the neat office, and then says, "Ventress has a temper." "Sir?" Dogma asks, confused. Kolar raises a hand, eyes narrowing. All around the room, things shake, then fling themselves off shelves and leap out of drawers. In an instant, the office is a chaotic tangle of flimsy plast and stuffing from one of the couches and torn scraps of cloth that used to cover the windows. Then, deliberate, General Kolar ignites his lightsaber again and slashes down. One swift strike cuts through the computer terminal and the desk beneath it in a spray of sparks. "Good enough," he says, satisfied, and keeps the lightsaber in hand, blade lit. "This way." Dazed, Dogma follows him out through the hole he made, then down the halls at a quick pace, back towards the embryo chamber, Dogma realizes, and hides a grimace when he sees Commander Havoc and a whole squad there. "General Kolar," Havoc says, saluting. "You heard, sir." "It's Ventress," Kolar says shortly. "I can feel her." Havoc stiffens, then turns and waves his troopers quickly towards them. "Any idea where she is, sir?" "Probably headed for the genetic records hall," Kolar says grimly. "She got the guards here?" "Yes, sir," Havoc says more quietly. "Maybe took them prisoner. We haven't found any trace of them." "I'll look." Kolar nods to him, and Havoc lets out a breath. "Thanks, sir. They're just cadets. Didn't even have time to calm out." Kolar grips his shoulder for a moment, silent, and Havoc smiles crookedly. Then he turns, hauling his helmet back on, and calls, "Genetic Records Hall. Now, double time. Let's go." No one even takes a second look at Dogma, and he breathes out, trying not to let his relief show. With a quiet snort that says he caught it nevertheless, General Kolar opens the embryo chamber door, then leans in. "Ozzy 3, he says. And a moment later, the droid buzzes out to hover in the hall with them. "General," it says, "I've calculated the odds of every clone after the first batch having a chip to be close to 100%. They are being implanted early in the cloning process." "Chip?" Dogma asks, startled. Ozzy 3 looks at him. "A biological control chip," it says. "I believe it is a danger to my patients, which is why I am assisting." "Thanks," Kolar says, frowning. "That's too many to remove." "Most likely," the droid agrees. Kolar grunts. "Shock will find you in the morning," he tells it. "Transfer what you found to the Jedi High Council. And this, too." He hands over the chip, and the droid takes it carefully. "I will," it agrees. "Good night, General Kolar." Dogma watches it leave, feeling cold. Control chips in the clones, in the whole army, and no way to get all of them out. But it's the Kaminoans putting them there, and surely they wouldn't. Except they decommission clones all the time. They don't care. The clones are just property to them. A hand settles on his shoulder, and General Kolar looks at him, studying his face for a long moment. Then, gently, he squeezes before he lets go again. "Tup's fine," he says. "Help me with these clones, and we'll meet Shock in her quarters so you can see." Dogma wants to say he's fine, wants to tell General Kolar that there's no need to invite him into another general's personal rooms, but he wants to see Tup. That one glimpse of him just worried him more. "Thank you, sir," he says quietly. Kolar nods once. "Learn to ask more questions," he says, and goes to rescue the guards from the maintenance closet he stuffed them in. Dogma has absolutely no clue what to do with any of this, but he helps, because he's already in this deep, and he might as well. "Ow," Cody hisses, before he even opens his eyes. The bright, sharp ache of too many bruises radiating through his bones. He lies where he is for a moment, trying to force sluggish thoughts into motion, trying to focus. But everything hurts. It's dark, too. Dark and hot and humid. And he wants to close his eyes and go right back to a painless sleep. Eyes, he thinks. There's something there. Something he needs to think of. Something he needs to remember. He rolls over, takes a breath, gets an arm underneath himself. It takes a moment. It takes too much effort, but he pushes up onto his elbows and reaches out into the darkness, trying to feel for what's around him. His fingers brush cold, twisted metal, and all at once his vision clears. With a gasp, Cody rolls to his feet, Sith Warblade clutched in one hand, heart pounding in his throat. Under his feet, the pebbled surface shifts, rhythmic and slow, and a strange blue glow fills the air, diffuse and soft. It pulses like a heartbeat, like the lightning that Cody can't see, with long, slow bursts of light that throw eerie shadows over his surroundings and then fade to almost nothing before they return. There's absolutely no sound, and Cody turns, careful on the shifting surface. He can see trees curling up past him, thick with vines and tangled branches. But there's no now familiar glow of fungus down here. No rumble of thunder either. And after 2 days of it, it's almost eerie in its absence. No sign of other life. But something keeps Cody's mouth shut, keeps him from calling for Mace, even though it's the only thought in his head. Qui-Gon threw him off the cliff, and Mace jumped after him, caught him. And then there was something, something waiting, something that turned its head and opened its eyes and looked at them. Cody breathes, steps carefully. In his hand, the Warblade is a heavier weight than it was before, but the increase is almost comforting. The blade itself catches the pulses of blue and shines and ripples, soft and sinister. But Cody tightens his grip on the hilt and keeps moving. One step, another. Nothing moves. The silence prickles across his skin. They fell into a ravine and it was too dark to see the bottom. Cody wonders how far down they are, whether this is actually part of the city or whether it's just something they built over and ignored. Wonders if Qui-Gon planned to get both of them down here or if it was a fate meant for Cody that Mace wasn't supposed to be a part of. If it's the latter, clearly Qui-Gon doesn't know Mace as well as he thinks he does. Even if Cody was a complete stranger, there's no way Mace wouldn't have tried to save him. There's some satisfaction to be had in that, thin and bare as it is. Cody sets his jaw, strains his senses, but if Qui-Gon followed them down, there's no way to tell. Just silence, the oppressive heat, and the strange pulses of blue light. Right now, Cody thinks wryly, it would really help to have a Jedi tapped into his thoughts. If he knew where Mace was, if he knew whether or not he was in trouble. The sword reflects something dark within the ghostly blue, and Cody freezes. A spine. A spine growing up like a stalagmite from the surface he's standing on. But there's no missing the pattern of scales, the sharp edge of the stone. And then, just a bit further on, another. Each one almost Cody's height. The ground rises, holds, sinks. Breaths, Cody thinks, grim horror rising. He's standing on something that's breathing, something huge, something that saw him and Mace fall, opened one slitted eye, and stayed where it was. Somehow, that's worse than it immediately turning to eat them. Whatever creature is under his feet, though, it hasn't reacted to his movements yet, and Cody can't exactly levitate to keep from walking on it. Steeling himself, he keeps moving, careful with his weight as he tracks the pulses of blue up the creature's body. The shimmers across the Warblade of his sword get brighter, and Cody sweeps a careful look around, scanning for any other bodies, looking for Mace, trying to spot him, but there's no sign. Just a vast creature breathing in the darkness, perfectly silent. The pulses of blue are coming from huge pods set into the thing's body. Cody skirts the first one, wary, but it looks like a blister against pebbled skin, deep and ghostly blue, but otherwise unalarming. The pulses are regular, even, and he wonders if it's an automatic thing, some biological regulatory system working. He doesn't remember seeing it as they fell, though, and something about it raises all the hairs on the back of his neck. Mace couldn't have fallen too far from him. They landed in almost the same spot, if Cody remembers right. And he must have rolled a bit, but not this far. Maybe he went for help. But that thought doesn't feel right either. Mace wouldn't have simply left him. Cody knows that. The sword in his hand is a heavy weight, foreboding. Somewhere in the darkness above him, he thinks he can see a carved stone face, looming and craggy, the hood concealing it, and the hilt of the vast sword clutched in its hands makes Cody think Sith with automatic distaste, and he grimaces, passing under it with careful steps. More spines arch upwards towards a third blister of blue light, and Cody skirts them, wondering how big the beast can possibly be. There's a figure at his feet, a man sprawled across the creature's back, and perfectly, deathly still. The next blue falls away to nothing, then rises again, and Cody's breath jars in his chest like he's been kicked. "Mace," he says. Too loud, too harsh in the silence. But Mace doesn't move.